regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program. We're going to be talking today with Dr. Robert Young, the program director for Doctors for Responsible Gun Ownership. You know, one of the things that we've seen over the past 4 years under the Biden administration is, as part of this whole of government attack on our Second Amendment rights, we've seen, agencies like the CDC be directed to start promoting gun control research. You've seen the Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy, declare gun violence a public health epidemic, not violent crime, not violence, right? Gun violence. And when you view gun violence as a problem, a lot of doctors view guns as a problem. So will that change, at least at the federal level, under a second term for Donald Trump? Well, again, Dr. Robert Young, the program director for Doctors for Responsible Gun Ownership, joined me earlier today for a conversation. We touched on that, touched on some of the anti-Trump derangement we've seen from the medical community in the wake of Trump's victory. And again, what he hopes to see over the next 4 years from the federal government. Take a look and a listen. Dr. Young, thanks so much for coming on the program today. It's good to see you again.
Mr. Edwards, it's always a delight. Thank you.
Well, absolutely. It's always a delight on my end, too. And it's always nice when we have some good news to talk about. Let me just ask an open-ended question here. I mean, with the election results, do you expect to see a significant change in terms of how the Biden administration, you know, we heard a lot of talk about gun violence as a public health epidemic. The Surgeon General called gun violence a public health epidemic. Do you expect to see a change in focus and a change in attitude from like the Surgeon General's office, from the government agencies like the CDC when Trump, takes office in just a couple of months?
Well, I certainly do. I think we all do in this movement. Trump has been vociferous in asking for the support of the 2A movement and offering it. There's no doubt there's going to be a big change in attitude. I think Vivek Murthy's second round as Surgeon General is going to be his last for at least the next 4 years. Who knows? He might be back someday. He's been more of the same. He said the same stuff over and over to no effect, thankfully. We never talked about Vivek this administration because who cares? he can talk about gun violence as a public health issue, but nobody listened. That's a great thing. I understand that John Thune, who was just elected as the next majority leader in the Senate, of the three candidates had the best 2A record of all, not just voting in favor, but actively advocating. So that's a really good thing, isn't it? And we know the House is a mixed bag always, and it's a very thin majority. So, but, you know, they're basically on our side. My only hesitation is that during his first 4 years, President Trump, and during the first 2 years of that administration, the Republican Congress didn't actually act on anything in our favor. And then President Trump got all mixed up about bump stocks and what they really mean. So I think we certainly are waiting to see at the same time as being very hopeful.
I think that's a good way to describe it, right? Hopeful, but there are some concrete steps that can be taken to both undo some of the actions of the Biden administration, but then to be proactive as well, right? And frankly, you know, I know that if Trump does make those positive moves, if he replaces Vivek Murthy with a Surgeon General who says, listen, violent crime is a crime issue, gun ownership is not a public health issue. And all too often we see that, you know, gun violence is a public health issue involves putting in place the same gun control laws that groups like Brady and Everytown have been calling for decades. I expect the medical community, or at least some members of the medical establishment, to to put up a resistance. And, you know, you and I were talking offline here about some of the reactions that we've seen from the medical community, right? So the you sent me this story. The editor of the Scientific American apologizes for expletive-filled tirade against Trump voters. Laura Helmuth, right, put up a series of social media posts bashing the supporters of the Republicans as Trump won his way to victory over Vice President Kamala Harris. Then there was a story out of Iowa where a pediatrician told a Trump supporter, "I hope you lose your kid in a school shooting." I mean, when you see these stories, Dr. Young, I have said for a long time that we have a mental health crisis in this country. And certainly I think those professionals could use some professional help here if that's where their mind has gone.
We have a mental health crisis in the, quote, gun safety crew that populates most of our medical specialties. And even apparently, if Laura Helmuth, the editor of Scientific American, is any example, our entire scientific community, because Scientific American should be, had been, has been the premier general scientific journal for all subjects alongside Nature. And the editorial policies of those should be conducted by people who are not only objective, but able to understand the research and what it really shows. And, you know, and we know what it shows, beginning with Gary Kleck in the mid-90s, who found so many uses of self-defensive successes with guns. The CDC, which unpublished, confirmed his results to the T 2 years later. And then all the way through much, much work done well, all the way through, I think in 2002, a professor at George Mason University conducted what is probably the best study to date on defensive gun uses and found an average of like 16.7 million times a year now, which happens to be an average of all the studies done since Kleck began this. We know that good, responsible civilian gun ownership is a public health benefit. It prevents more harm than guns in criminal hands or even suicides using any means, let alone guns, do. That's a fact. And yet you have somebody like Laura Helmuth at Sci American saying, "Well, I apologize to younger voters that my Gen X is so full of effing fascists." Excuse me, I almost said it. You can beat me later. Effing fascists. The meanest, dumbest, most bigoted high school classmates are celebrating because, well, F them to the moon and back. I left Indiana where I grew up because it was so racist and sexist. You would think after clinging to their guns and religion, deplorables, garbage, somebody would pick up on the fact that not only many Americans, but as of less than 2 weeks ago, most Americans class themselves as the people, people like Helmuth, insult deeply. I just can't imagine it, let alone, of course, the pseudoscientific basis on which she thinks she's coming from.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and listen, I mean, that's a problem. Go on. I know you could. I know you could. And the arrogance, the elitism, right? The looking down their nose at anybody who voted differently from them, right? Oh, you must be a bigot. You must be a racist. You know, what bothers me the most, I mean, listen, I you and I have both been doing this for a long time. We've been called a lot of names before, right? That stuff actually kind of rolls off my back. Right. But it's what it signifies that bothers me, right? You know, because I am a believer in science, right? When my wife and I go to her oncologist and he says, "Listen, we've got this, you know, new drug that we want to put you on and let's see if it helps," we trust our doctor. We've got a good relationship with our doctor. Mm-hmm. And my doctor, frankly, you know, she's been going to this oncologist for 8 years now. And thankfully, she's still able to go. He and I have actually had some political conversations and we disagree, but he's very respectful of my point of view. I'm very respectful of his point of view. He has never tried to convert me. He has never tried to change my mind. We're comfortable enough with one another that we can have these conversations.
Right.
And he doesn't treat me with contempt and I don't treat him with contempt. But my God, you know, whether it's Laura Helmuth or again, that pediatrician who told some Trump supporter online, I hope your kid dies in a school shooting. The damage that this does, not to people like you and I, Dr. Young, but to the scientific community, to these doctors, to healthcare professionals who do want to provide life-saving services to their patients, right?
To people who disagree, but want to be able to depend on their doctors and scientists' objectivity in their interest and their service, like apparently your wife's doctor is able to do with you two. Which I do, you know, I don't care how my patients voted. I know what I'm happy about and how I did. If they raise it, I'll talk to them about it. If they disagree, we'll have a very simple, brief, respectful conversation. If we agree, we'll probably go into it a bit more because it's fun. But my job as a doctor is to help my patients wherever they are at. And that includes wherever they come from politically. I don't care. And this guy, Sharma from Iowa, prepare for your kid's funeral because you have nothing to lose. It won't matter to you anyway. Give me a frigging break. Nobody like that should be in a position to deal with the public in general, let alone what I consider still a sacred trust as a physician to be there to attend solely to the benefit of his patient to help them through whatever medical problem they have. That's unacceptable. And I'm very pleased to have seen that the Family Children's Hospital at the University of Iowa apparently has removed him from, he's in the witness protection program or something, because suddenly his name cannot be found on their roster of physicians. I am pleased about that because too often that has not happened either.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And again, I mean, I think it's the right thing to do. Why would you want to be associated with a physician, a pediatric cardiologist, by the way, who says, I hope your kid dies in a school shooting. There's no public relations firm in the world that's going to be able to help you out of that if you decide to keep an individual like that on.
No.
But
he's probably one of those pediatricians who can't tell the difference between children and adolescents when it comes to classifying age groups and risk of harm from guns.
Right. So, I mean, which gets us back to the name of the group that you are, you are now the project director for Doctors for Responsible Gun Ownership, correct?
Yes. Yes.
So, I mean, we think about this, Doctors for Responsible Gun Ownership. That doesn't mean that you don't. How do I want to phrase this? We don't have a culture, I think, in the medical community that talks a lot about responsible gun ownership, right? It seems to view gun ownership itself as a problem. Even though you and I have talked before, there are surveys. There are a lot of medical professionals who are gun owners. There are a lot of medical professionals who are Second Amendment supporters.
Right. Apparently, most surgeons own a gun.
But let's say the medical establishment
does
seem to treat gun ownership itself as a problem to be solved, right? So,
That's the received wisdom that's been passed on through generation after generation of medical leadership, because you don't get into national medical leadership unless you are part of the party line, which has always been this. From the 1980s. In fact, Helmuth's comments remind me of official pronouncements from the 1980s and late 90s from people like the head of the CDC, the head of the NIH, talking about how guns should be banned. They should be changed to be something dangerous, dirty in the minds of people. And it's apparently that attitude has not changed, but the fact is, most physicians above all, don't want to get involved in this stuff where they are supposed to tell patients what to do with their lives outside of helping them with their existing medical problem. And many, many physicians actually agree with us. Gun ownership is a fine thing. It's a good thing. It's critical that it be done responsibly. Secure storage is very important when you have people who are not able to be responsible around. It's not something you can legislate. Hopefully no one's going to actually go into people's houses to inspect routinely, my God. So we're advocates of gun ownership. It's a good thing for the public in good hands and for people to learn, train, be responsible with them. There have been several, not unreasonable prosecutions lately of parents who have probably been too inattentive to their teenage children's mental health problems and gun access. And while we don't have a position that's generally in favor of that, any more than we have a position generally in favor of laws requiring secure storage. But they're clearly parents are responsible for their children and for their access to potentially dangerous implements. And we have to be held responsible in the appropriate circumstances. We're for responsible gun ownership. Nothing else.
And I'm glad you talk about the fact that you can't legislate this one size fits all gun storage policy because we don't have a one size fits all society, right? But I will say, Dr. Young, I mean, I'm with you in terms of because I don't think the prosecution, let's say, of the father of the Appalachie High School shooter. Or the parents in Michigan who were charged after their son went into Oxford High School and opened fire. In those cases, to me, it wasn't a matter of violating a gun storage ordinance, right? This was, I think it rose to the level of criminal negligence on the part of these parents, because in both of those cases, their child was reaching out and asking for help, actively saying, can I go to therapy? Can I talk to somebody? Right. And to ignore those signs, right. This isn't now just a matter of statute. To me, this is a matter of common sense. And as a father of five, if one of my kids came to me and said, Dad, I've got some stuff going on and I don't feel comfortable talking to you or mom about it, but I need to talk to somebody about it. If I just blew them off, I would be failing in my job as a parent.
And
if they went and they did something as heinous as, try to take innocent lives, I believe that I would feel like I was culpable to some degree. I believe that I would feel like I bore some responsibility for that. So in those cases where, again, it is so egregious and it's not just that somebody stored their gun in a lockbox and their kid found the key, something like that. To me, that is not criminal negligence. But in some of these cases, again, where you've got parents who are turning a blind eye, and maybe that's, maybe that's a part of the conversation going forward about being a responsible gun owner is what to do when you see these warning signs, right?
Yeah,
it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to embrace gun control. But you've got groups Hold My Guns, the Wisconsin Gun Show Project, Gun Store Project, that says if there's somebody in your house who's going through a crisis, or maybe you're just going out of town for a couple of weeks and you need to store your firearms away from your home temporarily.
Sure.
Here's a way to do it without getting law enforcement involved.
Right.
It's not a big deal to get your guns back. It seems to be like those are the types of programs that groups like Doctors for Responsible Gun Ownership and the medical establishment can and should get behind.
Yes. And DRGO does participate with Sarah Albrecht in her Hold the Guns project. Very proud of that. And it's exactly the right attitude. It occurs to me as we talk, gun control is something that is the responsibility of the owner of the gun. This is where these folks apparently failed. It's not a It's not a responsibility of the government. It's a responsibility of each individual one of us who has chosen to take charge of what can be a lethal weapon. And we have to control that. That Absolutely. Is our responsibility.
Yeah. But yeah, and but again, I think that we're talking again about the parental responsibility overall, because let's say instead mm-hmm. of a gun, yeah. this 14-year-old in Georgia grabbed a butcher knife from the right. kitchen drawer and went to school and stabbed his classmates. Again, exactly. if he had been telling his parents, I need help, right?
Right, right.
And it's not a gun right. issue. It's the individual, right? And this is what we always talk right. about.
Absolutely.
It's not the inanimate yes. object. It ultimately goes back to the yeah. individual. That's why I have a problem with red flag laws, because they take the guns away from somebody that they've just said is dangerous.
No.
But they don't right. do anything to help that right. dangerous person, right?
No. And there's actually some very, this last couple of weeks, some recent work that suggests even more strongly that there's really no statistical evidence that red flag laws actually do prevent on a population basis, more than occasional violence. On a population basis, it makes no statistical difference. I'm a psychiatrist. That's part of what brought me to this work years ago when I joined DRGO, because I care so much about people who certainly are at risk or successfully, I hate that term, suicide. I care so much about people who are traumatized by violence, period, done to them or witnessed by them. There is so much more of that in our society than anyone really wants to imagine. And I want to help that, and I want people to care about getting that helped. And, you know, parenting, I think specifically, we go into it, you know, a little rug rat who's going to run around. The floor is going to be so much fun. But it involves the greatest responsibility any of us can take on in our lives almost indefinitely. And people have to get serious about that as their kids grow, individuate, start to develop their own attitudes, sometimes their own illnesses. We have to be responsible. I think everyone agrees on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, again, Dr. Young, I really appreciate you coming on the program. I hope that you can come back soon, because I'd love to talk to you more about that recent research into red flag laws, yeah. because sure. it's something that always bothers me, right? I mean, I'll see these yeah. sound bites occasionally. A politician will say, well, you know, there's evidence that I think the last one I saw was there's evidence that for like every, you know, 20 red flag petitions, yeah. we know that, you know, we've saved one life.
Yeah.
Which I always wonder, okay, so does that mean that the other 19 individuals had their rights violated because they weren't a danger to themselves or others? Or did they go on to self-harm and the red flag law didn't stop it? You know, again, that's great that maybe a life was saved, but are there more effective policies that are more constitutionally sound that could save more lives? You know, I think that's a fair question to ask.
How do you prove that one life was saved because of the red flag law? Maybe someone would have helped anyway. Maybe they wouldn't have suicided anyway.
No.
That's very tricky stuff, because they're basing their positions on what we call counterfactuals. What if Hitler had won? Oh, well, then all this. But proving it, that's a whole other story. Can I add one more thing, Dan,
of course.
When we're talking?
Of course.
Okay. I mentioned to you again when we were talking offline, one of the things I am so pleased about is that DRGO is no longer the only group that is good, honestly, at interpreting medical research. And that goes into, quote, public health research, anything in economics that bears on health and health risks and things. When I got involved in DRGO, probably 10 to... more than 10 years ago, 10 to 15, we were the only people who were good at that. I'll accept John Lott, who is good at everything he looks at.
Right.
He is a hero, properly. But when it came to medical research and being able to criticize bad research, which is most of it, we were the only ones. In the last 5 to 10 years, I have seen so many lay folks, and by this generally, I mean to a journalist like yourself, and there are many others who have gotten so good at understanding what really are some basic principles I share. We could talk about this in more detail another time. Might be good.
Sure.
But they're doing a great job of understanding this now and pointing out exactly the things that we would, and we can't keep up with everything. So now we have this whole cadre of people. I don't know if we taught them or if they picked it up, but I'm so glad that it's not just us, because these things are important to everybody. And while we are a very good face of the 2A community versus physicians who are way off the wall about things, I've talked to some of them and I'd introduce myself. They say, "Oh, we've heard of you." Good. That's the idea. But it doesn't depend on us only anymore. And I'm so glad about that.
Well, I am glad about that, too. And I appreciate the kind words. You're right. I think there are a lot of other voices out there who are able to take these studies and look at them and point out the flaws. But I would say, again, a lot of that, I think, does come from the work that Doctors for Responsible Gun Ownership has done. And mm-hmm. I think you and the organization still very much a valued and necessary, needed part of the 2A community. If for no other reason than you can talk to your peers mm-hmm. in a way that layman can't, right?
Right.
And so, again, I think you guys have been doing invaluable work. I am so glad that we are in a position now where hopefully, again, your work can get recognized by the White House, can get recognized by the CDC, by the Surgeon General, as opposed to having to fight back mm-hmm. against what those mm-hmm. agencies and what those individuals are doing.
Well, that's one of the hopes, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yes. Well, Dr. Yes. Young, again, thank you for coming on the show. And let's have you back again in a couple of weeks. I'd love to talk, like I said, more about some of the red flag laws and the research that's come out. And in the meantime,
let's do it.
All right. Well, excellent. Well, have a happy Thanksgiving if we don't talk to you before then.
You and your family too, Kim.
I appreciate that very much.
Thank you.
Ben. All right. We'll Bye. Talk to you soon. Thanks, Doctor.
Okay.
All right. Thanks again to Dr. Young for joining us on the program. You know, I am so blessed to have met so many good, just good people in the Second Amendment community over the years. And I have to say, I have a lot of favorites. I mean, it's not a short list, but Dr. Young truly is one of my favorite people to talk to. I think he is he's not just a great advocate for a right to keep and bear arms, but again, he's just a good guy. And again, I really thank him for coming on the show today. All right, let's get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report / what the hell were they thinking plea deal story, which is basically what this story is. A day after 19th birthday, Bay City, Michigan man gets probation for stabbing a stranger on Halloween. Say what now? Jordan Morris turned 19 on, I guess it was Monday of this week. And he got one heck of a birthday present from the criminal justice system, because the following day, Tuesday, Morris appeared before Bay County Circuit Judge Jesse Scott Wood for sentencing. Back in September, Jordan Morris pleaded no contest to one count of assault with intent to cause great bodily harm, which is a 10-year felony in Michigan. In exchange, prosecutors dismissed a count of assault with a dangerous weapon, which was eligible for a 4-year sentence. Now, the judge sentenced Jordan Morris, again, remember, eligible for 10 years in prison, sentenced Morris to 1 year in jail instead, and then gave him credit for the 378 days that he had already served awaiting trial. The judge then further sentenced Morris to 2 years probation and ordered him to pay $400 in restitution to his victim. His defense attorney, Michael Huber, said, "We're satisfied with the outcome. I bet they are. And they expect Mr. Morris to be successful on probation. Well, I hope that he is. I hope that he is. Now, again, Mr. Morris pled no contest. He did not plead guilty, apparently for reasons of civil liability and because he says that he lacked memory of his crime. And his defense attorney actually said that he had urged Morris to take the case to trial, but Morris instead opted to take a plea deal in the hopes of getting released. According to police reports, it was Halloween last year when police were called out to the Sheridan Arms apartments about 10 p.m. A woman had called 911 to say that her 62-year-old husband had been stabbed in the neck. When officers arrived, the man with the stab wound in his neck was still there in the apartment, had a towel up on his wound, and he told officers that he'd been walking his dog near the apartment building, in the parking lot just south of the building, when a teenager approached him, had his right hand in his pocket. The man told police he asked if he could pet my dog. And then he lunged at me and stabbed me in the neck. He didn't say anything other to me than, "I want to pet your dog. Is she friendly?" And I said, "Well, she may growl at you, but she won't bite you." According to the stabbing victim, who ran inside, told his wife to call 911, he was able to provide a description of his assailant. Said that was not wearing a Halloween costume, even though it was Halloween. Said that the teen didn't try to take anything from him. Said the teen didn't try to rob him. Just, "Can I pet your dog?" And then got all stabby. About 15 minutes later, Morris's mom called 911 to report that her son was behaving strangely. She said that he had left home for about 20 minutes. When he came back, he was breathing heavily. So police went to the woman's house. They found Mr. Morris lying on the living room floor. He initially denied leaving his home, and then told police that he had been out trick-or-treating for a couple of hours, even though his mom said he'd only been gone for about 20 minutes. Morris's mom said that her son had been trick-or-treating from about 5 p.m. to 8 p.m., but after he came home, he then left again. She said she believed he was high on drugs and added that he had punched her in the face before. The mom also gave police a folding knife that she saw her son place on the kitchen counter. Police arrested Morris at the scene. You know, again, even if there were drugs involved, even if Jordan Morris wasn't aware, as he claimed, of the crime that was committed. Now, I know that Jordan Morris pled no contest, which means he's not admitting guilt, but he admits that police have enough evidence, prosecutors have enough evidence that he'd likely be convicted. I still don't know how we go from a potential 10-year sentence to basically time served, particularly if there is no. And again, it sounds like this is just based on the reporting from MLive in Flint, Saginaw, and Bay City. 2 years probation, $400 in restitution to the victim. Nothing about, you know, drug treatment, nothing about anger management, nothing about mental health, right? None of that. Just show up and talk to your probation officer once a month, maybe take a pee test. And as long as you stay clean, then you don't have to worry about going to prison. And in fact, even if you do apparently fail a pee test, you really don't have to worry about going back to prison for 10 years or anything like that. It may be a week or two. May being the operative word there, because you may also get a slap on the wrist and just be sent on your merry way. I hope this was a one-time aberration on the part of Mr. Morris. I hope for the sake of the citizens of Bay City, Michigan, this was just a one-time aberration. But I am still just not convinced that this was a just sentence after a 62-year-old man was stabbed for no reason whatsoever. In fact, when he was trying to be friendly to the stranger that he encountered, that just doesn't seem like justice was done to me. All right, on to today's armed citizen story. This is an update to a story we actually talked about a few weeks ago. A homeowner justified in a fatal shooting of a man inside a Platte County home. This was in the Kansas City area. And again, we reported on this initially at the time, but now we've officially got word that the homeowner did, in fact, act in self-defense. Platte County Prosecutor Eric Zond stated in a news release that the law allows people to use lethal force to protect themselves or another person from death, serious physical injury, or a forcible felony. And he said this homeowner, this woman, reasonably believed that a man she did not know rushed towards her and into her home might hurt or kill her or her four-year-old child. Zond added, while the man's death is unfortunate, quote, this woman had every right to defend herself and her child. It was September 18th, about 9 o'clock in the morning, it's broad daylight, when police say 37-year-old Joshua Hinderleiter of Dearborn, Missouri, walked onto the property belonging to this woman. According to authorities, he was partially clothed, was acting erratically, including praying to a horse and then attacking the woman's dog. The woman told authorities that Hinderleiter had tried to ride a pony that belonged to her and her husband. He then allegedly flipped over the pony's water tank. He grabbed an electric gate and got shocked. She said he became very upset, then ripped off the grate and threw it, or gate rather, and threw it to the ground. So the woman called her husband, who was not there at, in the property at the time. He called 911. The woman then retrieved a handgun from her locked gun safe. She said she could hear Hinderleiter shaking the front door of her home. She heard her dog yelp in pain, and she told investigators that she worried that Hinderleiter was trying to kill her dog. So she opened her door when she saw Hinderleiter had moved to the driveway. She shouted out to him, "I have a gun. Leave my dog alone. Get off my property." According to the prosecutor, Hinderleiter allegedly raised his arms above his head, spoke in gibberish, and then ran towards the woman. So as he's running towards her, the woman fired at him. When he continued towards her, she retreated inside her home. According to the prosecutor, he allegedly charged her again and then actually managed to make his way inside of the residence, the woman firing several more shots at him at that time. She grabbed her child, who she had placed in a bedroom before she walked out, you know, to the front door, and they ran to a neighbor's home. When police arrived, they found Hinderleiter's body inside the residence. Autopsy revealed that he died of multiple gunshot wounds. Toxicology reports show that there was a presence of THC, but that was the only drug found. Zond says after carefully reviewing the circumstances of the shooting, it's clear that the woman's use of deadly force was justified. A man rushed towards her, entered her home while she was there alone with her four-year-old child. It is fortunate, he said, that she was able to defend herself and her child as they were not hurt in this terrifying incident. So I didn't think at the time that there was a real chance that this woman was going to face charges. I'm glad it did not take months and months for the authorities to make that official determination. I mean, September 18th still almost took 2 months. Was a pretty clear-cut case of self-defense. Maybe they're just waiting for the toxicology reports to come back, things of that nature. But for whatever reason for the delays, the good news is that this homeowner who protected herself and her four-year-old not facing any charges for acting in self-defense and defense of another. All right, finally today, our good deed of the day in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A young man in Colorado who was recently honored for his actions, helping to save a neighbor in distress. This is the pint-sized hero in question. And really, it was a life-saving act on the part of David Macias. He's a fifth grader. He was riding his bike in Gypsum, Colorado. This was back in August. And he, as he's, you know, tooling around the neighborhood, noticed one of his neighbors in the doorway of his home just kind of slumped over. And so David pedaled back home as fast as he could. He told his dad what was going on. Dad, need to call 911. Deputies from the Eagle County Sheriff's Office responded to the home. They found the man motionless in his doorway. Deputy Heath Mossness, according to Vail Daily, one of the first officers on the scene, he said the person was disoriented, so an ambulance was called. And then Mossness noticed that Macias, who's still, you know, straddling his a bike there, watching the scene, asking if his neighbor was okay. Mawson said he recognized the family name, so he went over to Macias's house and thanked David for his actions after the gentleman had been taken to the local hospital. So the Gypsum Town Council this week recognized Macias's actions. Eagle County Sheriff James Van Beek presented Macias with an outstanding citizen certificate as well as a challenge coin, calling Macias a hero, a phenomenal hero, saying that the young man's actions show that, quote, anyone can make a difference in an emergency. That's absolutely great. I love it. The deputy, by the way, who responded, said, if David had not called 911, I think we would have had a different investigation than we did. So it sounds like the neighbor in question is okay. And again, in large part, thanks to the quick thinking and fast actions of a fifth grader, David Macias, there in Gypsum, Colorado. And again, getting some well-deserved public recognition for his quick thinking. And I think that's a pretty good way to end the week, don't you? Well, at least for Cam and Company. We will be constantly updating the website at variantarms.com between now and our next show on Monday. So I hope that you'll be checking out the website. We got you covered in all the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation, maybe even some international news as well. And we will see you back here next Monday for another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. Hope you have a fantastic weekend. And I look forward to talking again very soon. Until then, be well, be safe, be free.